Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're going to round off our Futurology series today with Dr. Shane Bergen from the UCD School of Education. Good morning to you, Shane.
Good morning, Philip.
Something a little bit different for today's slot. You have been doing a kind of a survey of sorts with some of Ireland's leading scientists to find out what major developments they see coming in the future. So let's talk first about chemistry and plastics. You've been talking to Dr. Tony Keane in UCD.
That's right. Tony is a chemist in UCD, and he's really interested in plastics, and people have been for well over 100 years. Incredibly, it's over 100 years since Bakelite was first brought out onto the scene. And since then, plastics have just exploded. They are everywhere, and it's becoming a problem. By 2050, the World Economic Forum reckons that more plastic will be caught in the sea than fish in any given year. And that's worrying because plastic is inert. It doesn't go anywhere. And it's not great for us to be eating it or for it to be getting into the things that we eat. So we need better and smarter ways to deal with plastic. We need effectively more energy efficient ways to recycle it, because thanks to the durability of plastics, it's really hard for us, chemically speaking, to chop them up either physically or using chemicals to get rid of it. So we need to use them smarter. We need to do what's called upcycling. So we need to be able to reuse our plastics in a more efficient way. So when listeners put their plastics into the plastic recycling, they may well think that almost all of it gets reused. It doesn't, unfortunately. Most of it doesn't get reused. It doesn't mean we should stop recycling. It means we should invest in research, and this is what Tony's saying, so that in the coming years, we're able to do more with the plastic that we're throwing out.
You've also been talking to him about solar panels and how there is a new generation of much more efficient solar panels hopefully on the way.
Absolutely. And we need them, because when the wind doesn't blow, we need, and typically then the sun is shining, that's where we're going to get virtually all of our energy from. So in any given hour, the energy coming from the sun is way more than the requirements of the entire globe in terms of energy. So we get so much energy from the sun, and yet we take and harness so little of it for our electricity grids. So solar panels at the moment use silicon. So that's a semiconducting material. So it's able to absorb light from the sun and convert that a light energy into electrical energy. But silicon is clunky. It's not incredibly efficient at how it absorbs sunlight. So we need better ways of doing that. And I think the future, Tony says, is in something called nanomaterials, and in particularly thin films of nanomaterials that are far more efficient at absorbing light. So even at the northern latitudes like we are here in Ireland, we could catch as much energy from the sun as we'd need. And interestingly, that goes back to the plastics, right? Because if we are able to generate electricity in abundance, we can now look at more sort of clever ways of breaking down plastics and using them more efficiently. So all this sort of stuff is kind of circular chemistry. That's the future, according to Tony.
Explain the nanomaterials to me and how they work.
So nanomaterials are materials that have dimensions on the atomic scale. So like one or more of their sides is nanometer size. So it's absolutely infinitesimally small. And materials on that small scale behave differently to the kind of regular bulky materials that we know and love and use in our world. And when you can make materials that are of that size, you're able to tap into their rather unique properties. And they kind of open up a whole window of wonder there for scientists and engineers. So with these particular nanomaterials for solar panels, they're very interested in something called perovskites. So they're a type of semiconductor that can absorb light from the sun, but they can get an awful lot more energy from the sun than something like silicon can get. And that all comes down to their structure, so the way that they're configured at an atomic level.
Okay. Nanomaterials also then played a key role in the next conversation that you had with Dr. Jessamine Fairfield, a physicist in NUIG, when you were talking to her about the next generation of batteries.
Absolutely. Again, nano. So I did my own PhD in nanomaterials. I'm slightly delighted that these things are still relevant. But when I was studying them, they were really still at the bench. You know, they were at that kind of prototype phase. And we're now moving in the next couple of years from that R&D space into how do we make these work at a manufacturing level? How can factories work using nanomaterials? And Jessamine is really interested in this. And she sees that batteries are the next big thing for nanomaterials to get stuck into. And this is something that Ireland is actually to the fore. So people working in Trinity College like Valeria Nicolosi and Jonathan Coleman, both are world-leading scientists when it comes to nanomaterials, and they're looking to replace lithium-ion batteries. We all know that when you have a lithium-ion battery, if you have it in your car, it can take ages to charge up, and their lifetime is okay, but not great. And you've done radio programs about, the potential for large battery banks built on lithium ions to catch fire. Now, it doesn't happen all the time, and it's still safe to do it, but it is a risk. What if we could have other types of batteries using nanomaterials, which have a lot more surface area, and so they can store an awful lot more charge, and that charge is used then to power everything around us. They're very light, and they can store a lot of charge. They can also charge up and discharge much quicker. So I think really where a huge amount of research is going to go, and Jessamine would agree, is that we need better batteries so that when you're asking people to move towards things like electric cars and storage in your home from your solar panel into a battery, you need to be able to charge those up in a time that's around the same as filling your car with petrol. I think that's going to be a game changer. People ultimately won't be too happy to sit on a forecourt and wait for 20 minutes for their car to charge. But if they know they can get there, they can charge up their car in less time than it would take to fill it with petrol and do it for cheaper, then maybe we're onto something. And that's really where they're going to see a huge amount of investment in that area in the coming years, not just for cars, but also for homes. Just last week, I was in Ballyvaughan, not known for its sunshine. The couple I was visiting had 12 solar panels on their roof. They said they get more energy in per year than they use. The problem is that they don't get the energy at the time they need it. But if they have storage devices, that really smooths things out so that things like solar panels on our roofs become even more sensible than they are today.
And briefly, what's the timeline for this? I mean, I know it's not guaranteed, but are we talking 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? What?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, but what I would say is that when push comes to shove, we can do things, right? So the science is there or thereabouts. Whether there's the manufacturing investment is the next thing. And then whether there is the policy that's in place to implement those things is another thing. If you were to say, look back at COVID and say, could we develop and share a vaccine with most of the world in less than a year? You say, no, that's absolutely impossible. But we did that when we needed to do it.
Fair enough.
Some, and I would be one, would say we need to do that now when it comes to renewable energies. So we could have this done in 5 years or less if there was the will and the funding to get it done.
Let's talk about medical science then and the enormous problem of antibiotic resistance. What developments can you tell us about here?
I spoke to Susan Kelleher here, another chemist in DCU, and Susan is very interested in surfaces and how microbes and the like stick to those. And she's very conscious of the increasing antibiotic resistance in the world. It's only since the 1940s that antibiotics have been used on a widespread scale, but it is like not since the 1980s that the last big class of antibiotics have been released by drug companies. And so that's a big issue. We need new antibiotics, and perhaps artificial intelligence can help us there, because we know now an awful lot more about how proteins work. We've been talking about that in recent weeks, thanks to AlphaFold and the like. So could we imagine new antibiotic classes that are cost effective for companies to make? And Susan is also interested in how can we stop surfaces from kind of contributing to the problem. So at the moment, we use alcohol or we use UV light to clean materials of microbes. But what if the surfaces themselves could be engineered so that like bugs don't stick to them in the first place? And this could be fantastic. It could revolutionize how superbugs persist within hospitals and other settings. And Susan is a surface chemist, and she's very interested in that and thinks there's a lot of promise there in the coming years.
That would be revolutionary, wouldn't it? Absolutely amazing. Dr. Shane Bergen, thank you very much. This has been most worthwhile. Look through or getting a window onto your world and your colleagues' world. And thank you very much for doing that for us over the course of the last couple of weeks. I need to take another break now.